the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast.
So if flu does return, we now have 2 years of no infections. That means that there's an entire cohort of children under the age of around two who've never been exposed to influenza. And it's possible that having such a large pool of children who are susceptible, they could potentially get quite high infection rates, and then the number of kids who end up or need to be hospitalised might be a lot higher than usual.
That's the voice of Associate Professor Sheena Sullivan, an infectious diseases epidemiologist. Sheena is the head of epidemiology at the WHO Collaborating Centre for Reference and Research on Influenza at the Peter Doherty Institute in Melbourne. Associate Professor Sullivan has written an editorial for the MJA, which talks about what impact opening the international borders may have on influenza case numbers and severity this coming summer, and what perhaps we can do to alleviate that impact. Associate Professor Sullivan is my special guest today. A month or so ago, we published the research from Marsh about summer flu, basically, particularly the 2018-19 summer, where flu just seemed to pop up and do its thing a little surprisingly. You've written an editorial to go with that research. Do we know, or were Marsh postulating about what caused that summer breakout?
What they did was they called people who were a notified case of influenza. So influenza is notifiable in Australia, and all cases are usually reported by a laboratory to the state health department. They identified people who were known influenza cases, and then they identified people who were known not to be influenza cases. So they were the controls, and they called them both. And the key finding was relevant to their travel history. The people who were influenza cases had around seven times the odds of having a history of travel compared to the non-cases. And that was in the first sort of 2 months of summer. And as the summer progressed, that odds reduced. And so what that suggests is that at the end of our winter, flu kind of dies out. It doesn't circulate so much. And then there's multiple continued introductions from the global influenza virus population associated with travel. And, of course, the Northern Hemisphere has its influenza season during our summer. And so when people fly back, some of them bring influenza with them. And at a certain point, one of those cases or several of those cases instigate local outbreaks and local transmission. So the odds changed across the summer, probably because initially it was mainly associated with people coming back and not transmitting, but then over time there must have been some local transmission. It suggests that there must have been some local transmission during the summer, which led to quite a sizable number of notifications for New South Wales that summer.
Did those results surprise you?
They didn't surprise me, because it's something that we've suspected for a long time. It was just really nice to get the confirmation that this other source of information is confirming our suspicions.
So what happened when COVID hit?
That was 2019. The 2019 influenza season was actually quite a long, robust season. There were lots and lots and lots of influenza cases notified to departments of health, and there were still fairly high interseasonal activity in Australia. So there were still a few thousand cases of influenza being notified per week during the 2019-2020 summer. And then in March in 2020, we closed our borders, we sent people home from work, we closed schools, or we strongly encouraged parents to keep their kids home. We stopped large gatherings, and we stopped all the things that make transmission of a virus that requires person-to-person contact. And by stopping all that human interaction, the virus couldn't transmit from person to person very easily. And, you know, flu, the listeners have heard of the effective reproduction number. We talk about how COVID roughly one person infected with COVID will roughly infect three other people. That number for flu is a lot lower. So for flu, it's maybe around 1.3, something around that vicinity, depending on the virus and, you know, other factors. But that effective reproduction number is lower for flu. And so by having all those mitigation strategies for COVID in place, it stopped flu. And this is not at all surprising because those strategies were taken from the flu pandemic plan. You know, nothing surprising there. But then what happened is that having stopped circulation, by closing the borders, we stopped importation. And so where normally at the end of our winter, the epidemics, and epidemics do just naturally die out, normally you get another epidemic or you see ongoing activity because of importations. But by closing the borders, we stopped those importations. And the duration of quarantine for COVID is 14 days. And that's because it was thought that people could potentially transmit, you know, for up to that amount of time. With flu, people can potentially transmit for that long, but it's much, much shorter than that. Usually for flu, people kind of are only infectious for 5, 6, 7 days at most. And so by putting people in quarantine, it has become very unlikely that people could leave quarantine still with infectious. Flu. And even if you had a family group come into quarantine and you had like mother pass it to father who passed it to child number one, who passed it to child number two, the interval between each of those events and the duration of shedding means that even if the last person is detected on, you know, day 8 or 9 of quarantine, they're probably not infectious when they leave quarantine. And even if they are, not every single case of influenza will spark an outbreak, right? Yeah, you still need to have all these other things going on. And so, you know, they happen by chance. There's a lot of, there's a lot of probabilities here. And so even if someone had left quarantine, the chance of them starting an outbreak was low. And then in places like Victoria, where we basically haven't been able to, you know, do very much for the last 2 years, if someone had exited quarantine in Victoria with flu, it probably would have had very limited opportunity to have gone anywhere.
What's your prediction about what's going to happen this summer in terms of flu, and what should we be doing about it if there is anything we can do about it?
So if flu does return, we now have 2 years of no infections.
And what does that do to our immunity?
That means that there's an entire cohort of children under the age of around 2 who've never been exposed to influenza. And it's possible that having such a large pool of children who are susceptible, they could potentially get quite high infection rates, and then the number of kids who end up or need to be hospitalized might be a lot higher than usual.
Does it matter where the return travelers are coming from?
So we know from the virological surveillance that we do that there has been circulation of 3 out of the 4 viruses, so in the flu vaccine. So the flu vaccine normally has 4 viruses in it. So it has an H1N1, it has an H3N2, and then it has, and they're both influenza type A, and then it has 2 influenza type B viruses. Now, one of those influenza type B viruses hasn't been seen since April 2020, and so we're all kind of hoping it's gone extinct, but we can't really say that for sure yet. But so 3 out of the 4 viruses that the vaccine is designed to defend against have still been circulating in different parts of the world, and that's included mainly tropical and subtropical regions, but it hasn't been limited to tropical and subtropical regions. So there have been a number of cases reported from equatorial countries in Africa, particularly West Africa. And, you know, part of the reason that we're able to see that is just that there's been a lot of effort in the last few years by WHO and the US CDC to support surveillance activities in those countries. And that's really paying off now. And that's great. That's been a massive investment on their behalf. And now we can really see the benefits of that investment. And then we've also seen cases in Southeast Asia. We saw quite a number of outbreaks in Cambodia last year that seemed to die out. But there's also been cases in Laos and Vietnam. And then moving over to South Asia, there's been quite a number of cases reported from India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Nepal. And we get a lot of travellers from India. And so in hotel quarantine, not every state tests for flu in their hotel quarantine.
Right.
But they do test for flu up in Howard Springs in Darwin. And through that testing, there have been a few dozen influenza cases identified, largely but not exclusively, among travellers returning from India.
I'm chatting today with Sheena Sullivan from the WHO Collaborating Centre for Reference and Research on Influenza at the Peter Doherty Institute. The research that Sheena's editorial refers to is by Marsh and colleagues and is also free to access at mja.com.au. The full links to that research and Sheena's editorial are in the show notes to this podcast. We also have a news article on this topic at Insight Plus, the MJA's online news magazine. All Insight content is free to access, and you will find it at insightplus.mja.com.au. While you're there, don't forget to take a listen to our previous episodes, which you can find at mja.com.au/podcasts. Back to our chat. Would you like to see routine testing of flu when they come in along with the SARS-CoV-2?
Of course.
Yeah.
So as an influenza virological reference laboratory, yes, we would very much like to be able to see what's going on.
Is it hard to do, or is it just a matter of adding
it's
in a,
the
an assay?
Same sample. You can test exactly the same sample that you collect for SARS-CoV-2 for flu and for RSV and for other respiratory pathogens for that matter. So it's no extra burden on the patient, but it is an extra burden on the lab, in as much as every test you add incurs a financial cost. But in some cases, it's no extra sort of manpower burden, because in these multiplex tests, you're just adding the same sample. You're not having to set up new tests for each virus.
Should we be getting vaccinated twice a year before summer?
No, I don't think the evidence is there to get vaccinated twice per year. Mm. I think people who are returning from overseas should get vaccinated, particularly because they have access to Northern Hemisphere vaccine formulation. Well, the vaccine formulation gets reviewed every 6 months, mm-hmm. and sometimes it gets updated or parts of it get updated. And so the vaccine that we got in April this year is a little bit different from the vaccine that's going into people's arms in the Northern Hemisphere right now. And so could be a little bit better at protecting against infection against the flu viruses that have been circulating in different pockets around the world. So I think it behooves people returning to get vaccinated before they get on their flight. And then for Australians who are leaving, who are allowed to leave and then come back, it would be a good idea to get vaccinated if you weren't vaccinated already this year before you leave, or if you don't, if you can get the vaccine while you're overseas.
Is there a message in all this for GPs, Sheena?
Yes, so I guess the main message for GPs is that if, as the COVID clinics start to wind down and GPs do start to become that primary focal point for people with respiratory infections, that they don't rule out other viruses. And so if a child or an adult comes in with respiratory symptoms, the message for GPs would be, don't only order a COVID test. Think about these other viruses. Think about, once we have established that flu is back in the community, think about whether or not they should be tested for flu. We saw sizable respiratory syncytial virus outbreaks earlier this year, which caused quite a big burden on our pediatric hospitals. That virus really does have its greatest burden in children, especially very young children. And by only testing for COVID, we miss those other epidemics. And those other epidemics can have quite a big burden on our hospitals. And let's not forget that the reason we have all these COVID restrictions is to protect our healthcare system. And so it behooves us to think about those other pathogens as they start to be allowed to circulate again. And that's, you know, flu is one of them, and flu does cause a very big burden, and it is a vaccine-preventable disease. Vaccines aren't perfect, but, you know, seeking advice early can definitely mitigate consequences of a severe disease. You know, if you're on your GP's radar and you're someone that your GP knows might have other conditions that could quickly exacerbate your condition, then that can't be a bad thing. And, you know, we have the advantage now of people being able to connect with their GP through telemedicine. Yep. So there's opportunities there. You might still need to go and get a test. You might still need to physically go in to get the swab. You know, there's opportunities for keeping in touch if for people who are at higher risk, particularly if they've gotten a COVID negative test, but they're still sick. I guess the other cohort too is kids, right? So, you know, there's a lot of attention being paid at the moment because we've vaccinated the adults and we're basically forcing COVID to circulate among children now, where yeah. children were not important for transmission before. They're kind of it. So we'll have different states are doing things differently, but we'll have school closures in response to COVID outbreaks, and we'll have a lot of disruption to children's education, a lot of further disruption to children's education. Yeah. And flu can circulate really quite well among children and potentially has a bigger burden among children compared with COVID. And so even in the context of children, if a child is unwell, and children get lots and lots of different colds, you know, when they're young, but if a child is unwell, again, it's from a GP perspective, maybe let's not just think about COVID, maybe let's think about all these other viruses that are going to be able to circulate now because we've opened up.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.